with your host, Anita B, as she plays all Canadian music with a focus on indie rock and pop.
Unquestionably one of the greatest and most influential British metal bands of all time, Cradle of Filth comes to Vancouver on February 24th, presented by Union Events with special guests Butcher Babies and Naomi Viscares. Tickets are available at unionevents.com, ticketfly.com, and Scrape Records. Don't miss the raw and rambunctious savagery of Cradle of Filth on February 24th, doors at 8 p.m. Tickets on sale now.
What do you know about bikes? Everything? Perfect. Nothing at all? Even better. At the UBC Bike Kitchen, you can use our space and tools to do your own bike maintenance, get one-on-one instruction on how to fix your bike yourself, or drop your bike off for us to repair. You can also buy a fully refurbished, guaranteed used bicycle, or a variety of new and used parts and accessories. The Bike Kitchen is UBC's non-profit, student-owned, full-service bike shop. We're located in the basement of the Student Union Building. Just look for the stairwell on the north side of the sub across from Gage Towers, or search for the UBC Bike Kitchen on Facebook. Stop by the Bike Kitchen and then get riding.
Hempology 101 is a student-run organization here to educate the public about the benefits of hemp and cannabis. Fast fact! Hemp is a renewable, sustainable source of food and fiber. Fast fact! Your body contains anandamide, which is part of the same family of substances as THC. To learn more, look us up on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/hempology101UBC or come to one of our great events. And don't forget, legalization through education.
Good evening, you're listening to the CITR 101.9 FM from unceded Musqueam territory at UBC Vancouver. My name is Simon Welton, and coming up in the next half hour is, as always, the White Noise Comedy Show. That's a half hour of sketch comedy, followed by the White Noise After Show, this week hosted by myself, and featuring special guest Connor Neckleput. How you doing, mate?
Doing well, yeah. It's almost reading week, almost that week off for us sort of university types. So, yeah, things looking pretty rosy.
Yeah, that breathing space is getting closer and closer. But
Yeah, you're getting closer to my neck. And
but, yeah, we got one more show for you guys before the reading break. We won't be here next week, but we will be back the week after for a fun drive, which is coming up pretty quick.
It's going to be fun.
I'll definitely be throwing out some details on the Facebook and the Twitter page about Fun Drive. Stay tuned for that. Find out how you can support the comedy show if you're enjoying what we do here and you want to see us continue. And also, part of it will be that there's some special prizes that you can earn through donation. So we'll talk more about that next week.
But quick teaser, might be the chance to meet a comedy legend.
Why, do you know any? Have you got someone in mind?
No, it's just quick teaser.
Quick tease of a lie. And as always, you can keep up with us throughout the week on Twitter and Facebook at White Noise UBC and on our best of page, which is whitenoisecomedy.podbean.com. And of course, you can check out the best of White Noise throughout the week at whitenoisecomedy.podbean.com. But without further ado, it's time for some White Noise. Warning, the following programming contains adult subject matter and some strong language. It is a work of satirical fiction. All characters and advertisements are completely fabricated. Listener discretion is advised.
And welcome to another episode of White Noise. I'm your host, host, Richard Blackmore, and tonight's episode is brought to you in part by Burger King. If you eat here, you're the king of nothing. First up tonight is an interview with reclusive folk artist John in Hiding.
Good evening. You're listening to Folky Folks, and I'm Hannah Stout. My guest tonight is folk legend and infamous agoraphobe, John in Hiding. Hello, John.
Greetings, Hannah.
So, John, why have you suddenly come back to civilization?
Well, since the tragic loss of my wife, I've just felt so alone. Something had to change. I hit rock bottom when I spent my entire rent check on webcam porn.
I hear those can be quite addictive.
Yeah, tell me about it. I mean, I spent a fortune on equipment for my room, and I barely made a penny.
So, the new album is influenced heavily by the loss of your wife.
Oh, hugely. I mean, every track is haunted by the presence of her ghost. We just couldn't get it out of the sound booth.
Let's play a segment of one of those tracks now. This is John in Hiding with And Now You're Dead.
I am sorry you are dead. I shouldn't have sat on your head. I should have listened when you said, hey, that's my hair. And now you're dead. I should have looked before I said, but I didn't. Now you're all flat, and so is the cat.
Powerful stuff.
Yeah, I actually broke down making that track 3 times.
Really?
Yeah, my car's fucking useless.
But it must have also been emotionally draining.
Oh, it was. Repairs cost me a fortune.
But, I mean, the loss of your wife must have been taxing.
Oh, yeah, horrendously so. She was my soulmate. I mean, we were a near-perfect match on eHarmony.
You must miss her a lot.
I think about her all the time. Every time I sit down.
What are your plans now that you've completed the album?
Well, there's really 3 options. Go on tour, continue with my webcam show, or kill myself.
I think that's a bit extreme, John.
I know. I'll never crack the webcam show market.
Well, the best of luck to you. That's all the time we...
Can I give a shout out, please?
Sure.
For those who were wondering, my webcam username is Long John the Pegger, all one word.
Oh, it's a pirate theme?
No. I should have listened when you said, hey, that's my hair, and now you're dead.
I've never understood the appeal of the webcam shows. I mean, what's the point of watching naked people if you're not surrounded by a bar full of drunk perverts? Next up tonight, someone selling.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Brian's Buy It, then Sell It for Way More, the shop made famous by such reality shows as Porn Stars, Porn Whores, NCIS Porn, and my personal favourite, Porn Virgins. How may I help you?
Hi, I'd like to sell my dignity, please.
All right, name?
Freddy.
Freddy what?
Mercury.
From Queen?
No.
Oh, because that might have been worth a bit. Age?
17.
Now the Queen question seems stupider.
Yeah.
Occupation?
Student.
Student? Are you sure you have any dignity to sell?
Yes. Well, I hope so. I really need the money.
Oh, is this one of those 80s movies prom things, you know, where you need the money to rent a tux so you can get the hot girl who's played by some chick in her late 20s?
No. I really want a hoverboard.
Oh, so it is an 80s movie thing. But do they really make those things now?
Well, not exactly. It's a Segway without the lame handle.
Just all the other equally lame parts.
And it lights up.
Yeah, so do my nephew's sneakers. But I wouldn't sell my dignity for them.
Well, it's none of your business what I do with the money. So how much do I get?
I don't know. We only got to occupation. Let me ask a few more. Greatest achievement?
Miranda Carmichael.
What?
Grade 10 behind the bike shed.
I'll just put procreating, that thing literally everyone can do. Ambition in life.
To be a millionaire.
No ambitions? Greatest fear?
What? Is that really a question?
Just answer the question, Mr. Mercury.
Fine. Vampires.
Vampires?
Twilight was fucking scary.
Whatever, it's your dignity. One more question. What is your dignity worth?
I don't know. That's why I'm here.
Fine. Well, then you get the standard offer of either a reality TV show appearance, $5 cash, or a hoverboard.
When I give up walking, I won't buy a hoverboard. I'll be a dignified person and buy a rascal. Next up tonight, Carl and Neil are back.
Neil, we're down to our last of the cat food.
Then eat the dog food.
Oh, can we please go nick something?
Fine, but this is your fault for spending the disability check on cat and dog food.
It was on special.
Your special.
So, what are we going to nick?
Well, down the pub, people were asking for skunk, so I was thinking we'd nick a few from the zoo.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, well, low security.
And they got pandas. So, how do we get in?
I'll boost you over the wall and you unlock it.
Okay.
One, two, up you go.
Oh, ah! Oh! There's barbed wire up here!
Oh, calm down. At least it's not razor wire.
Can I at least get the tetanus shot this time?
What have I told you about frivolous spending?
Those skunks are huge.
Those are elephants, Carl. The skunks are behind you.
Oh, I see. So how do we grab them?
Let's just grab one each. Come here, fella. Calm down, cool Neil. Let me give you a hug. Ah, oh, he sprayed me. Oh, my God. My eyes. Oh, fucking burns.
I got one. Oh, it went in my mouth.
Oi, what are you pair doing?
Oh, run. Why the hell do the blokes in the pub want these things? Oh, what a bloody fiasco.
Cheer up. I got one, Neil.
Oh, you bloody genius, Carl. Oh, God, you taste it. God, you're disgusting.
Oh, check him out. He's well cute.
Oh, don't let him out of the bag again. I'd hate to ever smell that bad. That's why I'm glad I have no sense of smell. Next up tonight, women are talking.
So, how was your date last night?
Well, it was great, for the most part.
What happened?
Well, it started out great. We had a nice dinner at Arby's. Oh. Then we went for a long walk because he didn't have any bus fare. And then back at his mom's place, he serenaded me with his recorder.
Oh.
It was the perfect night right up until then.
So how did he blow it?
Well, we were about to have sex. And then he stops to ask for consent.
Stop! This is a public service announcement for men. No woman has ever said this. This is common sense. Let's make it more common.
And then he stops to put a condom on. The fucking loser.
I don't always wear a condom. I wear two. Next up tonight, Elvis and Dolly are back.
Good evening, Elvis, Dolly and Bono. I am Agent Lexingtonshire of MI6. We need your help to bring down the most dangerous man in Britain, Simon Cowell. Elvis has now failed to kill him 3 times.
Well, you know what they say, 4 times the time.
Well, we hope so. Cowell is hiding out in his Caribbean fortress. He's well guarded. He has upgraded from Kelly Clarkson clones to Jeremy Clarkson clones. They are bigger, tougher and far more ignorant.
I got their number.
Oh, yeah, me too, man. I'm always having lunch with Jeremy Clarkson.
These aren't the real Clarkson, Elvis.
Ah, shut up, Bono. No one wants to have lunch with you.
Did I do something to upset you, Elvis?
Yeah, just go back to Scotland already, eh?
Ireland!
I don't care if it's a peninsula, a landlocked mass, or a fucking island.
Guys, please. You're on the same team.
Yes, and I still haven't agreed to us being called Elvis and the Wannabes.
Alright, boys, I'll soon bring her into landing.
Oh, I never knew chicks could fly.
I never knew penises could talk till I met you.
Oh, yeah, they can do a lot more. Oh, we're hit! Turn fire, you Dennis Guzzler!
Why is it always racist with you?
I just hate your sunglasses.
Well, they knew we were coming.
No, they saw us because it's broad daylight. Whose idea was it to attack now?
Well, I wanted to be home for Wheel of Fortune. Excuse me.
Oh, we're losing altitude and we're leaking fuel. I'm going to have to land.
Aim for something soft.
Hold on. Ah!
Oh, God, save me, please. Holy devil. I don't care anyone. Dolly, are you okay?
I'm fine. My head hit my boobs. How about you?
I'm fine. I was drunk enough, my body was limp on impact.
How you doing, Bono?
My legs! You broke me fucking legs again!
No, this is the first time I broke your legs. The other two times it was Elvis.
Ah, pipe down, Welshie.
Oh, they must have seen us crash.
Then let's set a trap.
Here they come.
We have to time it just right.
Cowell's in the first vehicle.
Are you sure?
He's wearing leather pants. None of the Clarksons can fit in leather pants.
All right. Are you sure this will work, Elvis?
We can only pray.
All right. Now!
Hallelujah! Oh my God! Did we get him?
Look!
Dear God. Oh, man.
He's a robot!
It all makes sense.
Finally. We come face to face, Elvis. And might I say, I think you're one of the worst I've seen. Should really find a different career.
Hey! I sold a million albums, man.
I was talking about you being a secret agent. The singing is not bad. Keep that up, maybe. But then maybe not, as I'm about to kill you all.
Aw, man.
Sorry, but not sorry about that. You did just murder 30 of my Clarksons.
Not so fast.
Oh, dear God.
No, I'm the devil. Somebody called for me earlier. Mr. Presley. Hey, yeah, that's me.
Well, what's this about? You need help with something?
Well, actually, something else. But since you're here, mind killing him? I'm not a hitman for hire, Mr. Presley. Well, can you get rid of him?
Well, no, not truly, due to the infiniteness of the cell. That's sort of a dualistic thing. But anyway, have you not read the Bible? This is all covered in there. Anyway, you owe me one, Elvis. Come on, Cal. Back to hell.
Aw, but I was about to take over the world.
What have I told you about that? No, not until Judgment Day. It's only another 2 weeks. Be patient.
Wow, that was insane.
I'm just glad we didn't get hurt.
Can someone please get me to the hospital? Can you bring my legs too?
Another successful mission for Elvis and Dolly. Another 18-hour surgery for Bono. Next up tonight is our poetry corner. And tonight, I'm reading a recent discovery. It's a Dr. Seuss poem entitled Dr. Seuss for Dictators. One fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish, your fish, my fish, your face, my fist. Revolutions are propaganda. Smear campaigns and coup d'etats. Become the glorious commander. Celebrate with champagne and caviar. Theft and oppression. Magnificent will be your luncheon. Abuse and destruction. Done best with a truncheon. Homicide, patricide, regicide and genocide. And create a gulag to put dissidents inside. Pheasants and peasants. Is there really any difference? Guilt and conscience. All of it nonsense. Well, no wonder you hid that one in the drawer. Next up tonight is a songwriter's Q&A.
Good evening and welcome to Ask the Artist. This week's panel consists of Nirvana frontman and shotgun enthusiast Kurt Cobain. Our second guest is frontman of The Doors, someone so cool he can get away with using an organ in his band. It's Jim Morrison! And finally, our third guest is the former singer of The Smiths, renowned smug vegetarian and publisher of the world's worst novel since the Fast and the Furious 3 book adaptation. It's Morrissey! first question, you in the tie-dye shirt.
My question is for Jim Morrison. Is Rock dead?
Rock isn't dead, but it's got a terrible hangover. One day, it shall return. But first, we gotta kill Maroon 5.
Next question, you with the plaid shirt on.
Hi, yeah, my question is for Mr. Cobain. Did you kill yourself because you couldn't handle your fame and how big Nirvana got?
No, I killed myself because I was chronically depressed.
Oh.
Next question, you with the eyeliner?
My question is for Morrissey. How did you develop such a unique style of singing?
I don't know. It just comes to me like a gift from the gods for the peasants of the land. So I drop my pen to paper till I understand.
Okay, next question. You with the same Nirvana shirt everyone has. Hi, my question is for Jim. Would you have fought in Vietnam if you'd been drafted?
I was drafted, but I was ineligible due to my allergy. I'm allergic to being shot.
Next question. You crying?
My question is for Morrissey. How is it that you just get me? I hear it in your lyrics.
What are you talking about? We've never met before. Unless, did we have sex on tour?
Next question. You with the gross hair?
Actually, man, it's called grunge hair. Thank you very much. And my question is for Cobain. What do you think of the Foo Fighters?
Yeah, that's why Dave was on drums.
Next question, you with the bad glasses.
My question is for Morrissey. Do you feel responsible for all the people you've depressed with your music?
My music isn't depressing to me or my fans. Listening to dance music makes me want to shoot myself. No offense, Cobain.
One last question, please. You with the nut-hugging pants.
Hi, my question is for Jim Morrison. Why do you never button up your shirt?
Because then a portal would open and I'd break on through to the other side.
That's all the time we have for today. Join us again for more Ask the Artists. Try to run, try to hide. Break on through to the other side.
Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah. I never liked Morrison or Morrissey. I preferred Van Morrison. But then again, I'm partially deaf. That's the end of our show. Join us again for more. White Noise. White Noise was written and directed by Simon Welton, starring the voice talents of Connor Nettlebutt, Caitlin Docking, and Simon Welton.
Guest writing by Connor Nettlebutt.
I never get tired of that song, our music, for the intro and the outro.
I think it's going to become classic.
It's become iconic.
It's going to be covered by sort of instrumental TV show and a radio show theme song cover bands.
Or just bored jazz musicians, is probably more likely. So that was the White Noise comedy half-hour sketch comedy. I hope you enjoyed that. As I said before, we are off next week, but that'll be back next week after for a special show for the fun drive that's coming up. But stay tuned now, as we are going to do the White Noise after show, which is a mixture of music, and we're going to have some debates on some of the topics we raised in the show tonight, and some current events. There's plenty of those of interest going on at the moment. But before we do any of that, we are going to give you a chance to go to the bathroom, do what you got to do, and listen to some great music. So coming up first is Cat McLevy and All You Got.
Your job, no, it's your fault, and it's on. CITR and Discorder are proud to present Space Melt with Mind of a Snail on Friday, February 12th at Renegade on Main Street at 2nd Avenue near Science World. This one-night-only event features 9 renowned musicians and visual artists improvising simultaneously to create a mind-altering experience that you simply must see and hear to believe. For more info and tickets, go to spacemelt.ca.
All right, there you go. That was Lantern with He Is a Pinball. All right, so we're in the studio doing the White Noise After Show. My name is Simon Welton, and I'm with special friend Connor Neckelputt.
Here's my special friend.
So first off, yeah, what did you think of the show? Did you enjoy that? Did you enjoy my horrendous singing on that?
No, it was good. I liked the song. It was a bit of a change from usual, but I think in a good way. I thought it was a well-written song, to say the least.
Well, the funny thing was that first song that we played where I sang it in the first sketch was a piece of music I'd written before. And I was trying to write lyrics for it, and the first two lines of that thing just came into my head about sitting on someone's head. And it's so silly, but it just cracked me up. So I was like, well, maybe I can write a sketch.
Wait, so you're telling me that it wasn't autobiographical?
No, I haven't killed any girlfriends by sitting on their
heads
yet.
So it wasn't like a memoir?
No, no.
Because I thought it was. I thought, you know, because comedians take inspiration from things that have happened, you know?
Yeah, in fact, I don't think I've ever sat on any girl's head accidentally.
Or any guy's heads.
It's pretty good. No, no.
We don't need a gender.
Maybe a brother at some point in my life I've accidentally sat on his head.
I can see that, yeah. But not killed him, though. I mean, that'd be a bit harsh,
and it was
right?
Probably intentional in a little bit.
Yeah, well, it's funny because you intentionally sat on his head and didn't kill him, but you disintentionally sat on this other girl's head and you did kill her. So, bad luck, really.
Yeah, if it had actually happened, yeah.
Oh, of course, that being the obvious.
So my first question today from the show is, do you believe in hell?
In the classical Bible-espoused sense? Not really. In the sense that you can be in a place on Earth or somewhere that might psychologically or emotionally or physically feel like a depiction or a reimagining of hell? Possibly, yeah.
You think there is a possibility?
Yeah, well, I think you could be in a situation where it feels like you're in that place that the Bible describes.
Okay, I'm not talking about just having a bad day or being in a rough spot. I'm talking
I wouldn't quite say that feeling like you're in hell is just having a bad day.
What I'm saying, though, is that if you do bad things in this life, do you think there is a place that evil people go to and are condemned forever.
No, they just come back as cockroaches.
Do you say you're in the Buddhist route?
Oh, I'm a Buddhist through and through.
Yeah, I just...
That's why I only eat ants.
For me, like, reincarnation makes no sense because there is more bodies now than there were before.
Ah, but so, that's ooh. Here's
how,
we go.
Where do the extra
but
souls
bodies of
come
what?
From?
Bodies of humans?
Yeah.
Whoa, but that's the thing, isn't it? There's less animals. Because the idea is that the soul transcends the human form and can be re-inherited and come back as an animal or as a plant. Which is why certain
so
radical...
So you're trying to say that we all started as dinosaurs.
I'm not saying that, but that is there are certain radical people who think along the Buddhist, and I believe Jain, faiths like that, who actually will do their utmost best not to harm a single living organism across their lives.
I quite agree with that, in that I'm very, like, if even if it's an insect or something in my house... If I don't have to kill it, if I can just move it outside, I will. Like,
but do you bring a feather dust around to brush the street in front of you as you walk?
Not usually.
So, yeah. But so there are certain radical people who think like that, and that's because they believe that the soul that we are embodied with is only an addition that all living organisms have. So that the fact that humans are now more populous than before isn't actually a fallacy or
I see what you're saying.
Isn't illogical. Actually, yeah. There's a bit of a balance. Whereas actually there's a lot more better humans who are getting closer to enlightenment because sages, as you're an animal, you're further away from enlightenment as you get to human. And then you get to be like a sage or like a Buddhist recluse monk. And then you might just reach nirvana, which ties in, obviously, to our program.
Yeah. No, okay. That's... fair enough, maybe. Even the concept of living forever just to me seems like a wishful idea, in that it makes no sense if you think about it hard enough, in that why would life be infinite at all? There's no real reason for that to be true. And would that not be torturous in itself, in that it would mean, to suggest that, okay, you have this very brief time in, if you're living forever, this would be like a flash in the pan of your entire existence in some form or another. To say that you would then live in this world and there would be no suffering, so really there'd be no point to the existence after that, because there's no forces acting on you, there's no actual experience in it. So what is it that you're doing forever then? It doesn't make any sense.
There's no purpose. It's a reward. A reward for what? For fulfilling the big man's sort of simulation fantasy?
His checklist. He goes down the checklist. I mean, we've done a few sketches about
did
people.
Did you pick up the tomatoes?
Getting to heaven. And yeah. We've done that a few times just to try and... show it's a bit silly.
But on the flip side as well, there's, I think, two ways to look at this. That if you went to hell, for instance, and you were condemned to eternity with Satan and all his hellish instruments, you'd get used to them eventually. By the end of it, it wouldn't be so bad. You're like, oh, the rack, I've been on that 20 million times, no worries.
Yeah, hurry up, lads.
It'd be terrible for maybe like 1,000 years or whatever, but after a while, you'd get used to it. But on the flip side, if you went to heaven... Surely there'd be so many annoying people, well-meaning and very positively nice, yet really annoying people, who just for whatever reason kind of get to you, just like the way that they say things, or they follow you around, you're like, I want to hang out with my other friends or stuff.
Yeah.
That would be annoying. I don't want... In my ideal place, like, and I'm not trying to discriminate. I mean, everyone has... I'd be glad to see everyone reach that stage of enlightenment or benevolence, entering heaven, but I'm not sure I want to spend my time with all of them.
Yeah, and if morality changes over time and what becomes norm, even in the Christian or the religious societies, those norms change, does that mean that all of a sudden in heaven they're like, okay, well, you were eligible, but now being a little bit racist
under
isn't allowed anymore? It was kind of okay 100 years ago, but now your casual racism is a no-no, so... We'll get to sending you to hell. Sorry about that, Grandad. But your time's up. Because that's the thing. Like, when did they have it right then? I mean, because that's the argument of
what are the things we're doing today that will be considered very immoral in 100 years? Yeah.
So if the morality shifts, like, it just makes no bloody sense. Which I know has been said a lot of times. And I apologize if I've offended anybody who is religious, but send in an email. Give us your best argument. WhiteNoiseUBC@gmail.com. I'll read it out and we'll talk about it. Don't sit there crying.
So I think you're a bit full of yourself if you think you've just dispelled someone's entire life.
No, I know. I feel like I'm not saying something that everyone agrees with. So I'm saying let's have, you know, unfortunately, me and Connor are too close on this subject that
But that is only because people value it so dearly. Because you could say, oh, chocolate's the best flavor, and so I could disagree with you on that. But that probably won't make them upset.
But
in a way, it's their own problem. They are the ones who make it. I'm not sure it's that we should therefore say everything as if it's as if there's no malice behind it. And between us two, we don't say anything with malice. But to a degree, if they're upset, that's their problem. They're the ones who hold that idea so closely that it affects them so deeply that you've made them cry. So, Tom, what I'm trying to say is it's not your fault.
Yeah, and I agree with you, but because it isn't an empirical thing, it's not a provable thing, therefore it has to be a matter of taste, just as art, anything that is subjective, and religion, until proven otherwise, is a subjective idea, so therefore it's taste, and therefore you can't really get offended when people criticize it.
Not sure I'm feeling Christianity today. I think I might go for a bit more Buddhism.
Yeah, it sounds flippant, but that's, you know, the reality is some people change religions. Mm. People fall out of faiths and fall into faiths.
Whatever makes you happy and makes you nicer to other people, you know.
Yeah, but that's the thing that scares me is people go, but how can you have morality if you're an atheist? But are you saying that if you didn't believe in God, you would hurt people, and you would screw people over, and you'd be rude and horrible and evil, and the only reason you're not being evil is the promise of a good spot in the pretend mansion in the clouds when you're done with it all. Like, that's really kind of twisted and shouldn't be the way you think about things.
Hey, kid, I'll give you $20 to be nice.
Your morality should be based on your own feelings of what is good in this world, not on the expectations of another world.
It's like, it doesn't take much to see, oh, that person's reacted quite positively to me complimenting them on their hair or their suit or whatever, their taste in football. That's easy. They're happy. I'm happy because they're happy. Let's keep doing that. Whereas a punch in the face, they're crying at the very least. Oh, this is annoying. They're crying. I mean, I'm not going to do that again. I mean, the most sort of amoral.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the most amoral that's acceptable is to always think, I do that, but it's a lot of hassle. Yeah. Could be so much hassle afterwards. Like, I could screw that person over, but then there might be jail and there might be rumors.
Oh, they'll come and have a go at me.
Oh, there'll be so much aggro. Can't be dealing with the aggro, so I'm going to be a good boy. Like, just do that at least. All right, the next question, another one connected to the show, is how much would you sell your dignity for? We had the price of a hoverboard in the show. Would you take a hoverboard?
Can you qualify what my dignity is?
What I'm saying is I would say a public humiliation. The idea would be,
how much would I pay to have myself publicly humiliated?
How much would you have to be paid? How much money? Like, because that's the joke. Is that, like, people go on reality TV shows and they get paid $5,000 or whatever.
Oh, to make an ass of themselves.
For the entertainment of the rest of the uncivilized world. So, what would
the tasteless masses?
The Philistines, yes. What would you?
Those people from Philadelphia.
How much Philistine
bastards.
Money would you need?
Not in Philistine terms. That's not doing very well against the dollar these days. So, probably up it a little bit. Times two. How much would my identity be worth? I don't know. On one level, I want to say, like, I have a certain degree of integrity. On the other level, I'd be like, yeah, but I don't really care that much. I'd take $10,000.
Really, $10,000? $10,000? That's
I'm just throwing it at that. Because it also depends, right? I mean, like, are we talking like reality TV? The stage, the whole world's watching. They're all ready to criticize.
You will become a laughing stock
for the rest of the world,
at least nationally.
Oh, at least nationally. Okay, so yeah, I mean, because as opposed to on some backwater channel that nobody watches or something. But okay, so nationally, I'll become a sort of Trump-like figure. not in what he does, but in his controversy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd have to be a lot.
Yeah, go on. Give me a bloody number that isn't all right. 10 grand. That's really sad.
I have nothing to lose at this point, so I might as well just go all
just
in. Exactly. But at this stage, it's very much, I don't need a lot of money, so I could be like, you know what, I don't need to lose my dignity. At a different point in life.
So you're saying that you don't, there's no price.
Well, of
your
course,
dignity
it's
is priceless.
Circumstantial.
Bullshit.
But I'm going to give you a range.
Okay.
Between 10 grand and 10 billion.
Well, that's vague.
Okay.
My answer is this, which is it would have to be enough money, and it's actually the same amount of money as it would take for me to commit a real crime, which is enough money that I can leave and never come back. Like, go to an island, buy it, and live happily in my own isolation with the few people that I wish to be in contact with.
With the Zika mosquitoes.
And that would be it. If you paid me, you know, millions of pounds or dollars to do something ridiculous, then I would do it. And
that's all well and great, but that's not a number.
Run.
If we're gonna,
you can imagine the figure. The figure is probably like 50 million. Like, for 50 million,
what
I would disappear
island are you
forever.
Living on? You could buy Greek island for like 800,000.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But I want enough money that I would live fabulously for the rest of my life and could have whatever
can you say
life.
Fabulously again.
Fuck off. Oh dear. Okay.
So you want to live on a fabulous Greek island?
Why do you want to live in Greece? I don't want to live in Greece.
It's got a good climate.
I'm thinking like you know, Indonesia.
You don't need to pay in Greek
somewhere
money.
With good waves.
You
can't surf.
Indonesia is great. I love Indonesia. It's got tsunamis though.
Okay.
And volcanoes.
All right. Well, anywhere nice is a bit of.
I mean, yeah, I'm
going to
say Greece because it's like, I mean, you're from Europe, kind of, off continent, but, you know, it's a nice climate,
yeah,
you know.
I'd probably go
friendly
near
people.
Italy or something.
Italy, yeah. Italy, fair
or
enough.
Or Turkey.
Yeah, Turkey,
nice.
Yeah, Turkey.
All right. Well, this conversation is getting silly. just naming holiday spots. All right. We're going
to
play.
I go to Barbados.
We're going to play a song. We're going to come back and have a bit more chat. This is A.A. Wallace. With a secret name.
Disconnect the dots that outline your heart. If it wasn't hard, I couldn't give it away. Pull down on the trigger that ignites the spark. In the dark, I know you by a secret name. Someone else out there in the light, but at night, I know you by your secret name.
Thank you.
February issue of Discorder marked our 33rd anniversary and is on the shelf of cafes, retailers, and record stores now. This month, we feature the sounds of Michael Redd, DOA frontman and politician Joe Keithley, the rebirth of Milk, an overview of Vancouver's underground venue situation, and more. We have album reviews for Nap Eyes and Cindy Lee, and live show reviews of Magical Clouds and Fields. It's all in the pages of your favorite local mag by CITR 101.9 FM. A special thank you to this month's advertisers, The Lido, Horse Records, Recruiting Canada, Vancouver Theatre Sports, The Rio Theatre, The Rickshaw, Vinyl Records, The Live Van, and AMS Events.
Chaps, bricks and mortar. Now I made the cover, but I can't pay the band. What's more important is we're building a brand. Everybody clap your hands for the song, dance man. Everybody clap your hands for the song.
That was Jason Collette with Song and Dance Man. That was a good tune. I like
yeah,
that.
Groovy, funky. The one before was classic as well, actually. I like that. The A.A. Wallace stuff is really cool.
Yeah, yeah. You're saying it sounds a bit like the Wombats, like in the more electronic.
A little bit, yeah. More, the sort of more recent sort of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And a little Future Sailor from Mighty Boosh in one of the tracks. Check him out. Tell us if you email us if you can work out which song sounds a bit like Future Sailor by the Mighty Boosh. We're going to go into the current events now section of the debate. And so we're talking about the New Hampshire primaries, which are very action-packed.
Hampshire's is almost as random as Iowa. If you recall my comments from a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
What happens in New Hampshire?
The first primaries, that's what happens
next
there.
Next to Vermont, which has ice cream and some hills.
Well, the funny thing is, yes, a lot did happen there because we saw the implosion of Marco Rubio, on Saturday. He had all the momentum going for him, and then he got caught out.
But did he?
Oh,
did
totally. Watch, if you haven't seen it, what happened was he said a very canned statement about Barack Obama knowing what he is doing. And then Chris Christie called him out and said, this guy just keeps saying 20-second pre-written sort of sound bites by his writers, and the guy's an idiot. And then he repeated himself like three times, the same statement.
But did he actually have momentum? So he won the Iowa one. And anything? Yeah.
Okay. I was like, yeah, no, he did that. He did.
Yeah, he won Iowa. Yeah, fair
he
enough.
He was third into New Hampshire, like in the early polls. He was kind of third. Because he'd had a couple of good.
But to me, like the race is pretty competitive. I mean, Trump seems to be a front runner. People really believe Carson's gone from like one of the front runners. Like now, like
oh, he's out of it.
Yeah. So I think, like, but in that sort of rat race of the eight of them or six of them or whatever it is, there's always like a ladder climbing, one jumping above the next, and like week in, week out. I don't know if did Rubio have momentum or did he just get to Iowa first kind of deal.
Well, I think what happened was he got into the spotlight, and then everybody brought up all the things wrong with Rubio, and that's why he dropped off again. Which is, if you get into the limelight, you have to then take the pressure.
Exactly, yeah, and everyone else jousting towards you, yeah.
And I mean, Trump is Teflon, like nothing sticks to him apparently. But yeah. Other people, what always happens is they come up into the eye of the media and the public, and then they either say something or someone pulls a skeleton out of their closet. So for Rubio, his big skeletons were he's attended like the least amount of days in the Senate out of any senator. He doesn't vote on anything, and he's never passed a bill. He tried to pass a bill and then basically just gave up halfway through because it was hard. So he's got a terrible track record. He did have a few things going for him, though, in that he is quite charismatic and can speak well and has a diverse background, which sort of Republicans, like Karl Rove and all these strategists back in 2012 when they lost said, we need to appeal to the minority demographics.
To the diversified voters.
Or we're never going to win another election. And so that was that, you know, Marco Rubio is that guy for them. That's what they wanted. But yeah, he's gone down the pan now.
Yeah.
Nobody wants Ted Cruz. This is the interesting thing is, not do they not want Donald Trump, but the establishment doesn't want Ted Cruz because he's an evangelical and he's a radical. He's a Tea Party, like fundamentalist to the point where he's the reason a lot of the filibustering and gridlock in Congress has existed. He's been leading the charge on a lot of these things. So Republicans aren't a fan of him, the establishment, never mind
the
Democrats.
Yeah.
So they don't want him. So that they're desperately hoping one of these other guys will come out of the pack and do something. But the problem, I think, is that all of them represent the same things, which is Jeb Bush, John Kasich, Chris Christie till he dropped out today. Who else is even left now?
Ben Carson.
Ben Carson's kind of, yeah.
Floating off stage somewhere.
And he had some sort of weird things he was saying anyway. But like those guys, especially Jeb Bush and John Kasich, like those are the guys they would love. John Kasich is a bit more liberal, actually, of all of them, which is why they think his appeal is going to falter in the South.
He's the governor of Iowa, right?
Yeah.
Ohio, not
Ohio.
Iowa.
Yeah,
it's north of the Macy Dixon line. Yeah, the only one. Yeah,
it's true.
Can you be a hardcore Republican if you're
well? That's it. He is a Republican, but he's led a very more central,
more centrist kind of
to get elected there. So they feel like he won't work in the South. As always with Republicans, it's the best of a bad bunch sort of scenario where you're like they don't really represent a lot of Canadian sort of mainstream values.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to look at this as a more objective sort of Republican analysis, which is that's ever my job title, please kill me.
Republican analyst Simon Welter.
So I don't know what's going to happen right now, but it's interesting to see if John Kasich can actually become more popular, because I think Jeb Bush, I don't know what it is about Bush. Maybe it's just the name Bush, but he can't, for love nor money, and I mean money, like that guy spent $1,000
on money and not that much love.
$1,000 a vote in Iowa and won and didn't.
Yeah, I mean,
So
that's always like a retrospective thing, it's only because he didn't do well. I mean, if he did do well, then it's like, oh, right, great. But yeah, but the point is, he's not doing well.
Yeah,
and even spending as much as he is,
exactly,
he's still not doing well.
In spite of all that money, he still can't you know, he's getting... He can't get blood from a stone, is what he's trying to do, so...
He'd want to.
So that really, yeah, I think John Kasich, if he can pull it together, might still legitimately be the candidate if they just deny Trump, because they can. They could just deny Trump the seat.
So even if he wins all, like, most of the delegate votes, whatever, they can just go, hey, you're not really Republican.
I believe, yeah, there is some sort of loophole in that the Republican Party can basically just say no.
Would they that'd be farcical to go through all that. So that, I mean, I could get why they would from the establishment sort of perspective, the institutional perspective, but that'd be farcical. I think we're beginning to, I can't see a Republican candidate winning the general election in, is it 2016 or 2017? Whichever year it is.
It's this year, November.
Is it? Yeah, okay. The rat race that's going on within the Republican side at the moment, I think, is evidence that the party isn't united, that they don't know what they want, and that they're really going all out to appeal to voters, which means that, in a way, they're already not doing enough as it is. Whereas, you see, like, the Democratic side, so you've also had one win each for Hillary and Bernie Sanders. I mean, those two are the only real sort of candidates at this point in the Democrat side. But they're going about things very cordially. They're going about things very easily. Like, they're conceding victories to each other, going, yeah, well played, you know, I'll get the next one. It's all very, I mean, like, as much as people will have a lot to say about, yeah, who's, like, funding Hillary Clinton, and it seems like a fair race. It seems like they're both in it to win it, but they're also both sort of, they're not at each other's throats. And I think that speaks to the kind of confidence that each of them have within the party, but also for the party as a whole, for the sense that either of them could win the primary and go out and realistically win the general election in November.
Yeah, I mean, definitely Hillary is I would, if she had the nomination, I would think at this point there's no one I can see in the Republicans that would beat him, her. But Sanders, because he, you know, in any other country in the world, he would win, hands down. Any country. Like, I honestly can't think of a country where if he said, hey, I think we should do something about healthcare,
North Korea,
education. No, because even they, you know, like, if they were like, we're not going to kill you if you vote for Sanders, I think he could win an election. But
Russia.
Yeah, again, like, you know, if there was anyone running against Putin...
There always is.
Well, how long do they last?
Like, that's the thing. Yeah. So if Putin keeps them alive long enough...
Yeah,
okay.
If Putin doesn't, you know, poison their families, then they might... No, but but I just think, yeah, I think...
Vlad, we don't mean that, Vlad. You're a hero.
But in America, the word socialist, not to everybody, but to too many people to count... is a dirty word and is, you know, it is a throwback to the red sort of scare and all that nonsense that went on in the Cold War. But it's a reality. And I do think that could be the undoing of him running, you know, in a general election. But if he's against, if he's against John Kasich, or if he's against even Jeb Bush, but against Trump... Man, I feel like if Americans are, you know, not sure about either of them, they would probably go for Sanders if it was a toss-up, you would think, because I do feel like if it becomes a general election, then the platform will go under huge scrutiny, and then people cannot get away from the fact that if you look at Trump's platform, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
It's less financially viable than Sanders is in many ways.
Yes, and it's basically giving himself a nice little earner. Like, it's obscene what he would do for billionaire classes. Yeah. So, if that's the case... Then maybe Bernie has a chance in the general election. I mean, it's so sad that, yeah, any other country, I wouldn't bet against him. But there, but what would also be also is crazy is that if he gets elected, he would be the first Jewish president.
Yeah, he would.
Which is amazing.
Which is cool. It's good. I mean, yeah. Diversity as well. It's funny because on the one hand, and actually I have one thing to say, but another thing to say as well. On the one hand, it'd be great for more diversity, religious diversity, as one of many different areas of diversity. But as long as a Democrat wins, whether it's Hillary or Bernie, you have someone with a diverse background getting into the office. either the first female president
or
the
but
first
Jewish
president.
But these are very different platforms.
Yeah.
Like, Hillary is not going to, like, change much. I mean, I don't think she's going to do a lot wrong, but I don't think a lot would change under her.
But here's a question I have for you then, sir. So, actually, this is going to link into what I was going to say about a couple seconds ago, is that I read an article recently that actually said that millennials in the United States are actually beginning to become more fond of the word socialism than capitalism. Because of their experience, and especially because of social media and the power that has to spread ideas, I mean, whether propagandistic or whether real ideas, is that the youth, the young votes of today in America, will set the tone for the rest of for the next elections, I believe. And within that, I think Bernie's platform. I mean, the guy seems like a cool guy. His platform that has caught on. What he's saying, people, that's resounding people. So. Is it the case, because, and I don't know the Democratic side so well beyond the main front runners, but the way I see it in a way is that we have an opportunity here for the first female president, and, you know, regardless, that's a big step. I think, you know, as progressivism and as feminism becomes a more natural thing for everyone, to get that established, I think is good for everyone. I don't know who the next female president could be. Of course, like, this is the future. We're in the future, and we can't predict the future. But I don't know anyone within the Democratic Party. I can't imagine the Republican Party who'd be a serious candidate to be the first female president if it isn't Hillary Clinton.
Whereas Elizabeth Warren.
Is she viable, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Because my other sort of side to that was, I think Bernie's ideas have caught on. I think there's room. For even if he weren't to win, I think there's room for his ideas to proliferate and perpetuate into elections coming. So yeah, I mean, Elizabeth Warren might be that sort of that other female candidate who could reconcile more with Bernie Sanders' ideas, and also maybe jump up there. But and again, that remains to be seen how she'll do and whether she'll be motivated to run for president in the future. But so the question I'll ask you is: would it be better to have a female president and get that out of the way? We've got to get that. Like, finally, America's had like a diverse president. Barack Obama has had a female president in Hillary Clinton. And then hope, predict that in the future we'd have a more sort of a Bernie-leaning presidencies on the Democratic side, a lot more socially valued. Or do you think this is a time for Bernie? Because besides him being Jewish and besides him having quite sort of radical views in the political establishment, he fits that kind of old white stereotype of everyone who's kind of been in the Senate and in and especially in the presidency.
Right, but this is the thing: his platform itself will probably arguably do more for women than
because
Hillary
he's
being
very
a figurehead.
Socially, and he's a feminist. He's very socially minded. I absolutely agree.
Yeah, so therefore we need to think about what impacts the greater amount of women more. Yes, Hillary being president may inspire more women to go into politics and to reach these high-level positions. But that is something that has been happening and will continue. Yep.
It's only growing.
It was, what's her name? Madeleine Albright was the first. She was former Secretary of State. She was actually the first woman in Congress, and interesting thing is this is you know, sort of going with what this kind of leads into what you were talking about, is the fact that she and also Gloria Steinem, who's a feminist activist who's well known, have both made comments recently suggesting that women should vote for Hillary because she's a woman and that's what women should do. And you know,
I mean,
it's the
feminist ideal, yeah.
Right, but that to suggest it's an insult to women, because that suggests that they're voting based on gender, which that's the whole bloody point of feminism, is to remove gender from the equation when it comes to, in that, you know, people should be based on their ability rather than their sex.
But that isn't true, though, because there are people who say, like, there should be quotas and stuff in, not necessarily presidential or political offices, but in companies or in certain sectors, that there should be quotas on female and, I guess, male involvement.
But that's a different issue, in that, yes, perhaps that, you know, as Trudeau has done here, he had a 50-50 male, female cabinet. Yep. And yes, something like that might be a good idea to say, like, yeah, half your cabinet has to be, you know, it could be argued that that's a good thing. But I don't think that has much, you know, isn't really to do with what we're talking about, which is what women should do is what they personally think is best for their interest politically. And, you know, yeah, it's great to say, yeah, we got a woman in the White House, as it was great. I'm sure a lot of African Americans were happy to see Barack Obama go into the White House. But if life for African Americans hasn't gotten better during his presidency because police violence hasn't been looked at and hasn't been addressed, if opportunities haven't improved, then is that really a success? It is in a very broad, abstract idea, but not in a way that affects people on the day to day. And that, when it comes down to it, I think is the most important thing, which is if Bernie's platform creates real change, which when it comes to women's reproductive rights, you know, compensation for work, which is something he's talked about time and time again, and access to opportunity, if he's doing that, then, you know, it's in their best interest to vote for him. And I think it's just an insult to women to suggest that they should do something because they're basically saying you should do that because you have a vagina. You should vote for the other person with a vagina. And that just to me seems completely counterintuitive to what the idea of equality and not being bound by your gender, which is at the root of feminism.
To play the devil's advocate, and I agree with what you're saying, I think everyone should make choices based on their own beliefs and their own preferences, and it shouldn't be about whether you're a man or a woman. But with this hypothetical, for instance, let's just say Bernie wins, great. Let's just say the next election, Bernie again, or Bernie reincarnate, but another man, feminist man, progressive man, wins it, and that continues to be a trend where, like, we're getting feminist values into the system, but we're still not getting that female president. How do you think about that?
Yeah, but if that is the case, that these values and these opportunities are being presented to women in this, you know, idea of a future, then it would make it inevitable that eventually you would see a female president. I mean, most countries in the world have had female leadership. Angela yep. Merkel now in Germany, Margaret Thatcher yep. in Britain. Indonesia's, I think, had like 3 or 4 female leaders.
Is that true?
Yeah, yeah.
When?
Well, I haven't got the stats on me right now, but I do believe that's true. We'll look at it during
I'm not,
the
I'm
we'll Google
not entirely
it during
sure
the music,
about that, but yeah.
We'll Google it during the music.
For sure.
It might be another country down near that area, but I'm pretty sure that's the country.
There have been lots of Latin American countries, I think.
Yeah,
at least
absolutely.
One.
Argentina,
president, yep.
I think, recently. Yeah, so it's, you know, even if America stays a little more backwards, even Canada did have briefly a female prime minister. I don't remember her name right now. But
yeah, it was a very short sort of term, wasn't it?
So, and we do have the leader of the Green Party. Mm-hmm. Is it Elizabeth May?
Yeah.
Elizabeth May. So, yeah, so just because America keeps that part of them a little backwards for a while longer, you know, isn't the end of the world if every woman has more opportunity, more equality than she's ever had before. Mm-hmm. I don't think it matters who's in charge.
And here's what I'm just to play devil's advocate now, but I'm now going to suggest that actually, agreeing with everything you're saying, that we should still vote for Hillary Clinton and she becomes president, because at the worst, we have a female president. So that milestone has already been achieved. So we don't need that milestone doesn't need to be pressed for anymore. Everything's happened a bit more naturally after that. But also, if she is president and she doesn't fulfill on the obligations or the ideas that people want, that women want, that Bernie Sanders may have and espouses to provide and to aim for, if she doesn't do that job, then women will know in the future that they should have voted for Bernie Sanders. They should have voted for that person who was so clearly for what they stood for, and that itself will teach them, but they will know not to trust those established candidates like Hillary Clinton is because of her family and her reputation, and that'll give a stronger edge to those more radical politicians. Even as now Bernie is right in there, it'll sway it to his side more so the next election, maybe.
Maybe, but unfortunately, by the next election, he'll be dead, so...
Well, but that's I don't know, because millennials, I think millennials, the new voters who are only beginning to vote now and are only beginning to pay attention to politics now, there's a lot that they see, that they learn from. And learning's so easy nowadays. Hopefully, you know, you find something on Facebook or Twitter that actually tells you the truth. It isn't just some sort of propagandistic bollocks. But you can learn what's happened.
What was that? Propagandistic bollocks.
Propagandistic. And so you can find out what's happened. You can learn this, and then you can make judgments based on your preferences, your perspective. I think millennials will see what will happen this election, and if the establishment wins, if Clinton or one of the Republican candidates who is or maybe isn't Trump, I haven't quite figured out whether I think he is representative of the establishment. But they'll see that, and then the next time around, they'll be harking for even more change. I think personally. That this is the beginning of a sway towards the left, a more permanent sway towards the left from American politics.
Yeah, I think you could be quite right that in the new era, the sort of propaganda machine isn't as effective as it used to be, and you can't pull the wool over people's eyes.
That's interesting, because that is both true and not true, because you get the spread of ideas of things on social media, particularly, and messages that are very well researched, and there's lots of those. But there's also more bollocks than ever.
It's
often difficult to sort through things because you never know who's telling you a half lie, who's giving you the whole truth, who's not revealing their sources quite the right way. So I agree with you. But there is also a lot more horseshit out there than there has been before, just as much, as there's more credible and well-established and well-researched sources.
But what you have now is the inbuilt peer review, the comments section of everything
done. Don't get a
which
comment
is,
section.
I know some. No, some of them are horrendous, but like things.
Some of them.
But there are things. There are some interesting conversations that are had, and you know, if something's divisive that comes up, usually the top comments on like Reddit and things like that are
usually,
people
Reddit
making
often gives
some
you
sort
good,
of interesting
good,
or insightful
debate.
A debate on it. So
YouTube.
Yeah,
no.
I'm not talking about YouTube. I'm talking about websites where people are actually having
sort of
discussions.
Reputable websites, yeah.
Where people are trying to say things.
And that's absolutely fair play.
So there is, you know, I do think, well, I hope as well that there is a shift towards the left in American politics over, but it will be a generational shift.
Absolutely.
But it's sad because there was, it's not like it's never been Roosevelt, the New Deal.
Yeah.
There's a great history of socialist ideas in America. It was just all covered up in the 50s.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're going to play a song. We're going to come back and have a tiny bit more debate. And we're going to be out of here at 12:30. So the next song is, I really enjoyed this album when I was listening to it today. The album's called Each Other. And it's a guy called Aidan Knight. This is All Clear.
I'm alone with the thought of it. Night outside, it's there and it's gone again. Counting it fast and keeping it slowly. Time, all I'm alone with the thought of it. When we see you, we believe it in the air. All things go. When I see you, well, I believe in the air, all things go. Some things get lost and go missing, wandering off. But in time, mm-hmm.
scanning too fast, keeping things slowly, slowing time.
All right, that was Ruby Carentin. Oh, was it Carinto? How do you say that?
Ruby Carinto, I think, yeah.
Ruby Carinto with Zoot Suit.
A little bit experimental. It's a little bit out of our general range, but
yeah, it was kind of fun though.
Yeah, I was sort of boogieing a little bit,
so I thought we'd throw that in. Okay, so we've got a few minutes left. So one thing I want to speculate on tonight is today, somebody who makes me make that noise, Kanye West, has released the name of his new album. Because that's a thing we do now. It's called The Life of Pablo. And as he's not a Pablo...
No, I believe his name is Kanye.
I believe so. There's a rampant speculation about which Pablo he's referring to be him. So is it Pablo Picasso or is it Escobar, basically, is the question, because they're the only two anyone could really assume that he may be.
I think we're making a bit of a grand assumption here and assuming that it's about him. I'm willing to believe that he's actually decided to change career and he wants to become a biographer.
And he's just found some bloke called Pablo he wants to do.
Well, no, it could be Pablo Escobar, could be Pablo, the other one, Picasso. But no, generally, he's writing about, he's singing about their lives. He's not going to relate them back to himself.
But, you know, he said he was Jesus or Yeezus or whatever, and so...
No, I was a biographer. it's the mass media that are making the connections to him, that are making him such a self-centered being. I'm willing to believe he's actually just a very modest kind of person.
You obviously haven't listened to anything he's ever said, if you believe
that. I might be thinking of Kanye East.
I really hope that he doesn't equate himself with them. But I guess when you get paid that much money to make music and you know, you sell out arenas, it might go to your head a little bit, you know.
I mean, this is all idiotic. What he's trying to do is that he wants to become president in 2020, so he's trying to win over the Latino vote.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. He's doing a better job than the Republicans at it.
Yep.
I don't know. We act surprised at his sort of mentalness, but it's nothing new now. He's been doing it for a while. Maybe he needs a new angle. Maybe the biographer is the new angle for him.
Was it Glastonbury this year? He was on the main stage and declared himself to be the world's greatest living rock star.
Yeah, which is not even his genre.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, imagine Linkin Park going like, "We are the greatest jazz musicians of this era." Like, no, I don't know.
I'm Michael Bublé, and I am hip hop.
He espouses a lot of rubbish. As you said, like, you know, you're making a lot of money. The world is kind of falling at your feet. You have this power, which is a theme in several of the songs I've began to notice. It could get in your head, and it could turn you into a biographer.
Yeah, and it's sad, really, because there are certain people who can handle it and don't seem to be terrible people after fame, like Paul McCartney.
Rob Ford.
Seems like an...
Ringo Starr is what I was thinking.
It's funny, there are a few people, though, that are, like, noted for being nice guys, like Tom Hanks is apparently not a horrible person for
Leo,
all the money.
Leo DiCaprio.
Who else was I going to say? Oh, Dave Grohl.
Dave Grohl.
Ooh, I hope he's a good sport if he ever hears today what we said about Foo Fighters.
Grohl, I'm going to put my finger at Simon Welton, the scriptwriter on this episode.
I honestly do like the Foo Fighters.
Yeah, he has some good stuff.
I just thought that perhaps Kurt Cobain might not have been a fan of them because they are like a lot, you know, they are heavy at parts, but they're definitely a lot more accessible than Nirvana was. Like, real Nirvana was... You know, it took a few listens. Like I really liked Bleach, which was one of their first albums.
Eat it.
and that was like, you know, it's the first time you hear it though, it's not easy listening in the slightest. And especially as
Nirvana, kings of easy listening.
Especially as Foo Fighters have got on, they've gotten definitely a bit more accessible.
Yeah,
and less. I would say
like everyone likes at least one Foo Fighters track.
But
mostly Kung Fu Fighting. But you know,
what are you talking about? When did they do that? Sorry, listeners. I missed the joke. That I assume there's a joke somewhere there, but I can't see it.
Are you trying to tell me the Foo Fighters didn't do that song? Everybody was Kung Fu Fighting.
No, what was the guy though? What was his name in the 80s? He was a one-hit wonder, and he did the Kung Fu Fighting song. I don't remember. All right.
Noel Gallagher.
Google it. Send it into whitenoiseubc@gmail.com because I can't be bothered touching my computer that's 5 yards away. Right now, we're going to play one more song, and it's the end of our show. We won't be back next week. We'll be back in 2 weeks for the Fun Drive show, I believe, is our next show. Yeah. Or it might be the show after. But if it is the show after, we're still going to talk a little bit about it. So that keep your eyes peeled for information on Fun Drive. But yeah, we'll be back in 2 weeks with some new comedy and some new chats and some new music. So lots to look forward to. Have a lovely couple of weeks, and you'll listen to us very soon, hopefully, if you're so inclined. I'm going to leave you with a good one of my favorite tracks, not of all time, but like something I've been listening to recently that I'm really into. But it's actually an older artist. He's actually dead already. It's Elliot Smith. Who had a few albums in the 90s. I only recently heard about him, fell through the cracks of my musical repertoire. But he's really good. If you've never listened to him, I'd recommend checking him out. This is from Either Or, which is one of his albums. And
you mean Either Or?
and it's called Speed Trials. So check it out, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.